Very good. That's awesome.
I mean, maybe I can find out where some guys are.
That's what they want to see, right? Yeah. I think we'll put down Mario upstairs today. Because you guys are going to be one class, but we'll leave you upstairs. Yeah.
So, right, guys.
Next, Smart. I was hoping that we could switch to doing both groups together and moving away from the lap issues and then and doing a Ashgopher related series. We could do the Maharal series again if it's a different area that you'd like to do, and I'm very open to suggestions.
Let me think about it.
The question is, for the first few weeks as man, would it be possible to do it at the second time slot?
I was working. Same night, Monday night?
Monday night. I was see if that would enable Rabbi Lazarus to finish his series. Now, Dovid Alessio is traveling for a couple of weeks, so right. I thought that would be something different with the second
year. Another thing is, when he's traveling, I'm traveling. I think.
Because you're speaking at the same thing.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Do you know your travel dates yet?
I do. I guess that's
interesting. I'll send you an email and ask you for them, and you can just provide them.
It's just the yeshivas thing.
The meet Ian. Okay, very good.
Okay.
We're speaking at the same time. Okay, so what are our water?
We've
got a bit of time for that. Just to think about what. And I was thinking, the idea is to give the hearer shkofa, the hearer shkofa in terms of what Rabbi Lazarus teaches in terms of Derech Hashem.
Right.
Let's give them a halach on how to teach it.
Right, okay.
Okay.
All right, maybe Maral will have a go. Maybe let me think about it.
Maral series was great, but I'm just saying don't limit yourself to that. If you're very open to it.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you very much.
There's something that particularly interests me privately, but it probably is not suitable for a course. I've been looking recently at the dissemination of Kabbalah through Europe, or through Hasidim, maybe a little esoteric. But maybe Hasidus might be an idea.
Hasidus
ideas. When I give that Hashgafa course, Hasidus was supposed to be a component, but it never wound up being, because there were too many other things we covered. So
that could be. I know that in a lot of the beginner shiurim in JLE, there's a lot of Hasidic thought that gets taught, and that's very possible. And the spread of Kabbalah in Europe, I mean, I'm not going to do a series on it, but if there's a subject like that, as a one-off, and you feel like, hey, that would be an interesting lecture.
If I talk about Hasidus, I could bring that in the mail, because Hasidus was in fact responsible for the spread of Kabbalah. Let me give it some thought. A new class needs more preparation, so I have to also...
So you also have to think about it. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Hi, everybody. So you are the, we have the Eichos outweighs the Kamas. So you're the special people.
Yes.
Okay, we'll wait another minute or two just in case more people come. Okay, so we were discussing. We're just doing some discussion about the treatments of people when they're in extreme situations. They're approaching death. They're elderly, and what does the Torah say we're mechuyev to do? What are we allowed not to do? What are we not supposed to do? So last week we started with the part one, which is really the one thing you're not allowed to do, and that is the issue of helping people commit suicide. That there is a prohibition. Both for B'nai Noach and for Yidden, not to kill yourself, and that is considered to be Ritzicha. Where we left off, however, was... So this is important, because as I indicated, there are some countries which legalize providing assistance for suicide. This is true in the Netherlands. It's true in Sweden. Canada recently issued a ruling that the provinces have to allow assisted suicide in the United States. This is the law in Oregon and the law in Washington state. And there are other states that are considering this as well. There's actually a very, very strong lobby arguing for assisted suicide and the like. So one has to know that the derech klal, assisting a person in taking their own life in an active way, what would the avera be? Well, it depends what you're doing. If you actually inject the guy, you're a roseach. If you give the person the emtsoi to take his life, you would be over on lifnei iver loisitei michshol, because you're giving him the ability to take his life, and therefore that would be usher. So the last thing, just for quick chazari, and I also want to add something. So we discussed, how do we understand these suicides that apparently do exist in Tanakh and in Chazal? So Shaul HaMelech seems to have taken his own life, etc. So the Rishonim give different hesberim. One hesber is that it was Shaloka Halacha. The other hesber is that he was afraid he would be tortured to worship Avodah Zarah. And there's a big chiddush here, that kishem that you're mechuyev to give up your life before you worship Avodah Zarah, that also means you're supposed to take your life, kill yourself, if you think you're going to be nichshol. That's a tremendous chiddush. Because I would have thought, it's one thing to say, if the goyim kill me, they kill me. It's another thing to say that I'm supposed to literally kill myself in order not to be over on Gimel Chamuras. But some Rishonim say that if Shaul is afraid that because of torture he's going to break down and worship Avodah Zarah, he is permitted and perhaps mechuyev to take his own life in order that he shouldn't be nichshal in the chait of Avodah Zarah. One mahalach. Another mahalach is that Shaul was afraid that if the king would be humiliated, tortured, that would destroy the morale, that would destroy the confidence of the Jewish army, and therefore kashem that a soldier can volunteer to put his life in danger to protect his nation. So essentially Shaul gave his life as part of a military sacrifice. Now, there is, none of these explanations will have any relevance in a hospital setting, right? Typically, if a person wants to take his life because he's suffering pain, there's no chashash he's going to do Avodah Zarah, nor is there this issue of military confidence and the like. So B'derech Klal, if you understand the Shaul case as a case of either Shalom Kedin or a case of a chashash of Avodah Zarah, or a case of destroying the morale of soldiers in combat, it would not furnish the basis of any type of hetzer for a typically terminally ill patient in a hospital setting. Yeah, John?
Yeah. If someone has to show them knows that they're going to just be tortured just for the sake of torture,
yeah,
and they
no, I understand. I'll get to that in a second. So far, the answer would be no. So far, because the kenach was only that the torture would cause him to be over in Avodah Zarah. Now, there is, however, a fourth mahalach in the Shaul's suicide, and this is found in a very, very interesting sefer with a very fascinating history. Maybe you've heard of this history. This is Shela Sechuvas Besamim Reish.
Rush.
Well, that's going to be the question. In around the 1700s, late 1700s, a fellow, Harav Shaul Berlin, it was before the Nitziv, maybe it was the Nitziv's Mishpacha, published, claimed to have discovered a manuscript of Tshuvas from Rabbeinu Asher, one of the great Rishonim, the Rush. And he published the Shelos Tshuvas B'Samim Rush. This is besides the Tshuvas HaRush, which were known for a long time. These were like new Tshuvas from the Rush. Now, obviously, new Tshuvas from the Rush are gevaldig important. The Rush is one of the Iker Paiskim, the Iker Rishonim. However, it was discovered, and it's pretty much muskim, that Besamim Rosh is a forgery, and that in fact Shaul Berlin in fact wrote the Tshuvos himself. So they're not the Rosh at all, they're only his. So there is a bit of a machlekes in Achreinim. How are you miyaches to the Besamim Rosh? It's not the Rosh, so obviously he doesn't have the chashivas of the Rosh. Some say, hey, if the guy who published this is a liar, then, you know, it's a puzzle. It's just a puzzle safer. We don't look at it. The person's a liar. Other Achrayim say, well, listen, he makes arguments. He brings rayas. He's mefalpel. So we look at it. Mimela, you know, if he's mefalpel in the Mekairis in a good way, we can use it. So some Achrayim refuse to look at the safer at all. Rav Avadya, for example, who knows that the some Rosh is a forgery, often uses the sefer for whatever it is, for a different shita. Now, what's interesting is that one of the big chidushim in the Besamim Rosh, and if it came from the Rosh, it would be a tremendous thing, is a reinterpretation of why Shaul was allowed to take his life. And he says that if not taking life, if staying alive is going to subject you to unbelievable torture. Not the knech that therefore you'll be Ovid Avodah Zarah. Stamazai, if staying alive means I'm going to suffer excruciating pain and torture, Zakta Besamim Reish, I am allowed to take my life to avoid that torture. Now, what's interesting is, if this would be accepted as halacha, this would have a tremendous relevance in the physician-assisted suicide movement, because the number one reason why patients want suicide is the pain that they feel cannot be adequately controlled, that they're suffering tremendous pain in the last, because cancer or whatever it is, in the last moments of their life. According to the Besamim Rosh, this might be equivalent to torture. Now,
what's the lumdus of that?
Well, the lumdus is that torture is worse than death. So a melee person is not mechuyev to stay alive in order to have something that's worse than dying. Meaning, the aveira of ritzicha is because you're taking away life, and death is considered to be such a bad thing that, you know, you have to try to avoid it, right? You can't kill yourself. But if the torture is worse than death, so you're not mechuyev to do something worse than death in order to save a life. But I want to point out that number one, this is not the Rosh, so Mimela, it's, you know. But number two, it's a Dasi Yochid, Lamaisa. Lamaisa, all of the Paiskim say that torture itself, pain itself, is not a halachic basis that makers either Ritzicha or suicide. And therefore, now it could say, if a person kills himself because he's suffering extreme pain, so it could be, you know, when Maseches Smacha says Ein lo chelek le'olam haba, when Maseches Smacha says we're not misabel, so already the Sefer Chassidim says if a person killed himself because his das, he was depressed and his das was not clear, avada we sit shiva and say kaddish. So it could be a grada if a person kills himself because of great suffering. It may very well be, we'll be misabel, we'll sit shiva, we'll say kaddish, but that's not a matzer. That doesn't say it was mutter to do. That just says we can't taina on the person because it was such a tsar gadol that he was not daitai tzui. I mean, you have to differentiate. These are two different inyanim. One is an inyan, how do we consen the person? So the answer, we don't consen a person who acts out of extreme desperation. But that's not the same. Besamim Rosh was saying it is mutter lechatchila to do such a thing. So lemaisa, we have to say that it seems to be a davar pashut that accepts. I mean, I see the conservative reform people who want to be more so-called progressive. All of a sudden, they become paiskim to bring up the Besamim Rosh, etc. But once again, the Besamim Rosh is not the Rosh. Mimela, as I say, it's a das yachid legamri that we are not saimichan. Yeah.
Let's say, Chas Shalom, someone's in a situation like in 9/11, they're burning to death, and then are they allowed to like jump out the window to hasten the death? Yeah, and they're going to die anyway.
But B'pashtus not, because they may have the halacha of a geises, but the halacha is that you know you're not even allowed to move a geises because you might be makarif his misa by a second. But you know what can I say? I mean, obviously these are the worst scenarios imaginable. So it turns out like this. So it turns out, yeah.
If this person is a liar on the Basama Reish,
yeah.
Then I see how you can bring his logic and discuss if right. He accepts his logic or not. You can't take something because he said it as
that's
a
correct.
Reason to accept it.
That's correct.
So if there's not also a reason.
Yeah, well, that's what I. Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. So I'm mentioning it just so you should be aware of it in case somebody brings it up. But it is not a shita that even beside the logic, it's not a shita that is makubal. But it is relevant. Lagabi sitting shiva. I mean that is important. Meaning not because of the besamim rosh, but certainly a person who took his life because of great suffering. We would, in fact, be misabel, we would say Kaddish, we would bury him in a regular part of the Beis HaKvaris, but that's for a different chesher. Not because what he did was mutter, but because what he did, he didn't have the kayach to be able to hold himself back. I mean, I knew a person, a Ben Taira. I knew a Ben Taira here in Yerushalayim who, he suffered for many years. It wasn't even like a cancer where there was like this acute suffering, but just a suffering, he was getting paralysis, other things, and he was in a wheelchair, and he fell off the roof. Basically, you know, he wanted to make it look like it wasn't, but even his own his wife, I know the family very well, you know, privately. She said he was a ma'aved atzmo b'das, but they had a psak that, you know. The tsar was so great for him that they were misabel. They did everything that they would do. So it happens. It had lo aleinu, but such things do happen. What's interesting is that in the Holocaust, suicides were very, very very low among from Yidden, which as Taka showed you, they had such emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not the emunah necessarily that they would come out alive, but emunah that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu is geizer is gamzul l'tayva, we have to be mekabelet. Even though they knew that, in all likelihood, they would die. In fact, there's one famous suicide in the Holocaust. This was the one of the heads of the Warsaw Ghetto, who Agrado was not a frum Jew. He was not a frum Jew, and at some point he took his life because he couldn't bear all the suffering, and all the suffering around him, not his personal suffering, but seeing all the Jews suffer. And the truth of the matter is, the Jews of the Warsaw Ghetto looked at him with extreme disgust. They considered that to be not like, you know, oh, he had so much rachmanis, he took his life. It was considered to be an abandonment, like, you know, how dare he just leave the sinking ship and everybody's suffering, and he takes the easy way out of taking his life. So there were some non-religious people who took their lives. Very religious Jews came out. Nobody ever did a suicide. But that came from their amunah. Okay.
Is Masada considered a good deed that they did or a bad deed?
Oh, so now let's think about Masada for a second. So now Masada is a very interesting question. Now, the other ma'asim in the Gemara about the women jumping off the ship, that actually fits the Gimel Chamuros because they were afraid they would be tortured and forced to rape or whatever it would be. So that would fall under the Gimel Chamuros. You're allowed to take your life. But now we come to Masada, right?
Huh?
Well, okay, that would be the Shad, like Rabbeinu Tam. It's not Gilei Arayis, but since it was a Shas HaShmad, Chol HaPachas, so the same Lumbus. In a Shas HaShmad, they could take their lives.
The Arayis wasn't because they were trying to shmad.
Say again?
The Arayis wasn't because they were
trying to shmad. No, I understand, but Shas HaShmad, when it is a Shas HaShmad, it actually does not depend on the motive of the individual. Now, they have a similar story, you'll recall, about a Beis Yaakov in Poland, where girls said that they did the same thing, but I've heard that story is actually not true. But the story in the Gemara is recorded in the Gemara. But Masada, what about Masada, right? So Masada, you had, was it 900 people? Like, right? Yeah. They're holed up in the fortress, and the Romans are going to break through. So everybody takes their lives, kind of better better dead than red, or he's sort of the communists and the like, you know, we're not going to let them take us, we're going to kill ourselves. And they took their lives, and it probably wasn't suicide, I'm not sure if it was suicide or murder, in other words, each one killed the other, or each one killed themselves, I don't know exactly which way it works, but it'll be the same analysis, basically. So most people say, the place going to talk about it, say that Masada was not done al pi chachamim. No, there was no psak, they just did what they did. And in point of fact, it would have been better to surrender and go to Rome, whatever it would be, as slaves. Others want to say that after it was the same cheshbon, that there may have been they may have been tortured for Avodah Zarah, perhaps Avodah Zarah, or even for Mishkav Zohar and Ashas Hashmad, etc. And therefore you could theoretically touch up Masada the same way as the Rishonim learned Shol. Right? So there are different ways of learning it and the like. I mean, this would depend on the Metzius. Were the Romans interested in, you know, it's not so borer that the Romans had an interest. I mean, they might torture you, but they weren't Bedavka interested that you have to be Makir their gods. I mean, it's not an automatic deal that the Romans were going to torture you to be Oved Avodah Zarah. The Romans were not a very religious people. The truth of the matter is, I mean, they themselves hardly worshipped their gods, you know, so they didn't really care that much whether a Jew worshipped God or not. They were concerned that Jews don't separate from the general assimilation in society. Okay.
Is it Pashat that suicide is Ritzicha?
That seems to be the Pashat, because the same way, in fact, I asked the Kasha the other way around. The Sechas Smacha says that a Ma'abed Asmi Ladas does not have a Chelik in Eilam Haba. And my Kasha is, L'chaira, if suicide is only because it's Ritzicha, by Ritzicha it doesn't say Ein Loch. If I murder, if Reuben kills Shimon, so Reuben has an awful Aveira, but Reuben has a Chelik in Eilam Haba, so why is a Ma'abed Atzmer Ladas Ein Lo Chelik Leilam Haba if a Ritzeach has a Chelik? Right? So Shlomo wants to say last week that Shlomo wanted to say that when a person Ma'abed Atzmer Ladas, it's like he's saying he doesn't believe in Tichias HaMesim or Hashoras HaNefesh. He believes that life ends with the physical body, so it's a Mida connected Mida. I wanted to say that when a person is a ma'abed,
For the kibbutz.
Okay. I wanted to say that when a person is a reitzeach, then there is the possibility that b'seif yamav, whenever he dies, he'll die mitaych tshuva. A ma'abed atzmei ladas, by definition, doesn't die mitaych tshuva because his chait caused him to take his life. And that's why he has no chelik in Eilam Haba, because he didn't do any tshuva for that chait.
Wouldn't that be true if it was like a slow death?
Well, it might be so, because the truth is they do have cases where Kevorkian, this doctor, would hook people up to an exhaust, to like a gas machine, and it took a few minutes for them to die, and they wanted to reverse it, so I guess it's shaykh. Yeah, so that's not 100% terrorist. Okay, but now I want to get on to the Morner Gale Lamaisa, because if it's so, we can conclude for a Dover Pashut basically that suicide or assisting people to kill themselves is not mutar al pidin. It's not mutar al pidin. That's ma'abed atzmei ladas.
You're saying first that it's ritzicha. Yeah. Suicide is ritzicha.
Yeah. So that's right. The Rishonim say that. Yeah. The same way you cannot take someone else's life, you cannot take your life. But the shaila we have here is, okay, ritzicha is normally kum v'yaseh. I do something to take a person's life. I stick a knife, I take a gun, right? I inject them with poison or air. Air can also kill, an air injection can kill a person. Right, that's ritzicha. And if he does it to himself, that's suicide. Like taking a bottle of sleeping pills. But in the modern setting, what about shevi al tase? A person is very sick, a person is suffering. A person does not want to live anymore. Let's start with a concrete example. A person has been diagnosed, Rahman al-Islan, with pancreatic cancer. Now, pancreatic cancer happens to be a type of cancer that's very, very fast. It spreads very fast. And kimat, it's like 100% fatal. It doesn't respond well to chemotherapies and the like. Although I have to say, I used this example before, and the example is true, but there's actually a person in the audience once who got up and said that he had pancreatic cancer. Hey, so the Eberster can do Nisim too. And he got better, but be it as it may. So let's assume he's given the following information. If we don't treat this cancer, you're going to die in 6 months. Through chemotherapy, which in itself will have real bad side effects, vomiting, loss of hair, because chemotherapy is putting poison into your body, we can prolong, we can slow the cancer so you will live another 3 months. Which means, short of HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing a nace, which is always shayach, without the chemotherapy, let's say he'll only live for 3 months, let's say. With the chemotherapy, we can give him another 6 months, let's say 9 months. So, is he mechuyev, al pi din, to take chemotherapy that will be mairech chayim shalai for a few months, even though it's not going to cure him, it's not going to heal him, it's not going to be a refuah, but is he mechuyev to prolong his life, even if that will be at the expense of great pain and suffering, both mitzad the cancer and mitzad the chemotherapy or the radiation that's being treated for the cancer. Now here, you have to understand, it is a devar pashut, that if a person declines medical treatment and dies as a result, that is not ritzicha. Because ritzicha requires a maisa ritzicha. The chiyuv of affirmatively keeping people alive is not because if I don't, it's ritzicha, but because there's another mitzvah in the Torah, loy samait al dam. So it depends. I'm mechuyev to try to keep somebody alive because loy samait al dam reyecha. Right, I can't stand by when somebody's dying. Now, why is the patient? See, you have to analyze it very carefully. The doctor's chiyuv is loy samait al dam reyecha. The patient's chiyuv is v'nishmartem, a different pasuk, v'nishmartem ma'ay l'nafshei seichem. It's not ritzicha. If the doctor doesn't give the patient chemo, the doctor is not a ritzeach. If the patient doesn't take the chemo, the patient is not a ma'abed asmer ladas. But there's a beetle asay of nishmartem ay l'nafshei seichem, and the doctor is oiver b'shevi altase on the negative commandment of l'isamer l'adam recha. So the question becomes, given the fact that it's not Mitzicha Mamish, when does the Torah allow the doctor not to provide tipulim and the patient not to take those tipulim, right? That, and that's a major question. This comes up a lot. Chemotherapy to people suffering cancer, putting people on respirators, if they go into cardiac arrest, like heart attack, do you have to pound on their chest? These are not Ritzicha issues. These are, when are you mechuyev to do meisen to keep people alive? Now, I mentioned last week that there is a legal document called the living will, where patients specify they want this, they don't want this. Dialysis. Do I have to put a person with acute kidney failure on dialysis? Now, you might think, well, what's the big deal? Dialysis is great. It keeps people alive. Well, you know, dialysis, the way it often is, a person has to be hooked to this machine like 10 hours a day, every day. Can't move, can't go anywhere. You know, a person might say, he would rather die. And it's also very uncomfortable. The pain, toxins build up in the kidneys, even with dialysis, right? So that's the general mixaya. Now, we're going to see there are going to be specific answers for each type of people. But the point I want you to understand is that in Lumdus, this is a different shaila than suicide. This is the shaila of when is there a chiyuv to provide therapies that keep people alive, and what are the factors that are involved in this? Leisamad al dam reyecha, v'nishmartem ayden afshes seichem. So, b'kitzer, this is a big, big topic. One could write books on this. There are books and svarim on the whole, you know, just on this particular inyan, because you have to go through every type of tipul, and this is going to come up a lot. But let me just say, there are two basic shitas here. One is a shita, and the one that explains it the most, Biarichos, actually explains it mainly in English, and that's the very famous, you should know this person, Rabbi J. J is an initial, J. David Bleich, or Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich. Have you heard of Rabbi Bleich? Rabbi Bleich is a Rosh Hashiva at YU. He's also a professor of law, although he doesn't have a law degree, but he happens to be whatever. I don't know, but he teaches law. He is a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, a great, great Pesach, and a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. I mean, I know people sometimes have guilt by association type of thing, but he really, really, really knows his stuff. He's written stuff in Hebrew too, but his main work, so far it's 6 volumes, but he adds a volume every year. He has a series called, and this is really, really should, maybe you don't need it in yeshiva, but when you're not here anymore, you should really get this whole series. It's called Contemporary Halachic Problems. And now he just did volume 6, so it keeps on getting bigger and bigger. And what he does is, the book is divided into chapters, and every chapter deals with like a modern issue. So he may talk about lands for peace. He may talk about the insects in New York City water. These are actually type of, right? They'll talk about the Anacassis worm, you know, the worm in the salmon. And for each one of these, he goes through all the Makairis, all of the Chuvas, all of the Acharedim. And he goes through it, he explains, and he's Mefalpel, and it's in English, so it's, you know. He's usually Machmer in Sakros, but okay, but be it as it may. But it's very, very thorough. I mean, a lot of people write on Halacha in English. A lot of people do, but ruba de ruba of the stuff in English is very superficial. You know, a guy like reads 2 Gemaras and a Tosfos and then writes an article about that. But he will go through, you know, from the Gemara all the way to the people who write shtiklach in magazines, rabbinical journals, like whatever, you know, and you know, he'll go through and be mefalvel with them, etc. So contemporary halachic.
How does he treat the different modern Paiskim of different ideological strands?
He brings everybody. He doesn't. I mean, he's a Haredi by inclination. He's a Haredi. He's not. He's not a modern Orthodox Paisik at all. But he'll bring everybody. Anybody who writes on a topic, he will bring. And you know, he'll be chaylik too. He'll be chaylik and Rav Moshe sometimes. I mean, you know, and obviously, you know, Rav Moshe was of a higher authority. But you know, he'll say what his sheet is. But he does bring everybody. Sometimes he only brings them in the footnotes. You got to be careful. Like sometimes in the Iker text, he'll say one thing, and in the footnotes, like, oh, but see, Igros Moshe and Fascination. You know, it's like a little footnote, you know, about people who are chaylik on him. Unknown, you know, little known people like Fascination or Moshe Feinstein. But still, it's a very, very kedai. They're very kedai books to have. They're really. If you're giving shiurim, halacha shiurim to general audiences who are not yeshiva trained, this is like the kamat the best. So I'm giving you a little commercial for him. This is kind of the best set of svarim you have. You have these ready-made shiurim that you can give, but you have to. It's not easy reading because since he goes through all of the makoros and he's mefalpel in the makoros, so in English, in a way, it's a little unnatural, even sometimes. To read an English explanation of a Chuvas Rebbe Kiveger is actually harder than reading the Chuvas Rebbe Kiveger, because English was not made. Look up the Rashi. That's easy to do that, but English was not made for this. But you know, he tries to explain everything in English. But okay, so be it as it may. Rabbi Bleich has written many, in this book, there are many articles on, or many chapters on this issue of medical tipulim. It's not only about that, but, and Rabbi Bleich subscribes to what medical ethicists call, secular medical, the vitalist position. Now, vitalist just means life. Rabbi Weil's position is very logical, very pashut. His point is, pikuach nefesh is deicha kol ha-Torah kula, except for gimel chamuras. Right, that's what he says. We are mechal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. Moreover, he says, let's look at Chilul Shabbos as the model. We are not only mechalel Shabbos if our intervention will cure the chayla, but even if our intervention will be mairech the life of the chayla, even by 1 second, by 1 minute. The Gemara in Yuma says, Mishnah in Yuma says, if a building falls on a person, so it's Shabbos, it's Yom Kippur, we mefakeach the gal, we pull off the stones, and if we discover that once we've uncovered part of the body that he's dead, then the stones are muktzah and it's a malacha, we don't go any further. If we discover he's still breathing, he's still alive, however that's defined, then we keep on going, even though for sure he's going to die, you know, very, very soon. But if you could be ma'arich chayim, even by 1 second, there is a chiyuv to do so, and you're even mechalel Shabbos to be ma'arich chayim. And so Rabbi Bleich said, number one, therefore, every second of life is infinite, and he holds that this is true even if there's Yisurin. And therefore, Rabbi Bleich says, Beferish, you are mechuyev to be ma'arich chayim, no matter what the pain is, and no matter what the duration is, and no matter what the mental state of the person is, even if he's unconscious, even if he's in a coma, because that is the inyan of pikuach nefesh, is daicha everything. Now, medical ethicists, this is not an accepted position in secular medical ethics. And secular medical ethics use the term vitalist as a disparaging. And it's, oh, all you care about is biological life. But Rabbi Bleich says, I mean, basically his argument is that we don't know why a neshama is in Eilam Hazeh. But it could very well be that the neshama in the guf, in those seconds or those hours or those days of great, great suffering, the neshama gets a kapara for all of its averos, and the neshama goes to Olam Haba, etc. Okay, now I want to point out the following. This is only one sheet. This is Rabbi Bleich's sheet. And again, he has Makaris for Henkin, he has Gedolei HaPaiskim that go with this. But even according to Rabbi Bleich, there are exceptions, even like Rabbi Bleich. Number one, Rabbi Bleich brings the Ran in Nedarim. That's not really an exception, but you're allowed to pray. If somebody is suffering tremendous Yisurin, even though you're Mechayev to try to be Ma'arich Chayev, you are allowed to pray that Hashem should take him out of his misery. And this is a Rai. It's a Rai from Beferish Gemara.
The Lashon has to be out of his misery?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
It could be clear that Hashem should...
No, in other words, if a person is suffering, so you pray that Hashem should either make him feel better or kill him. The Ran in the Dharm says the Feirish.
You
are, the Ran in the Dharm. In the fourth paragraph of the Dharm. The Ran learns this way. The Gemara in Ksuvus has a Maisa that the Yudah HaNasi was suffering tremendous Yisurin B'Saif Yamav. It seems to have been stomach cancer. That's actually the description, like intestinal pain. Chazal don't use the word cancer, that wasn't the, but it seems to be describing stomach cancer. And he was very, very, very suffering. And the Chachamim were mispalel yayman v'layla to keep him alive. So his shivcha knew that their tefillas were prolonging his suffering. So she took a big, Warren Ksuba, she took a big jug and she threw it from the roof. And it smashed, and it made a tremendous noise. And for one moment, everybody stopped davening. The Malach HaMavis took Rav Yudah HaNasi. And the Ran says she was allowed to do it because since she did not do Ritzicha B'Kum B'Yasei, she just wanted to stop the davening. So you see, Klar, that you're allowed. Well, you see, on one hand, you're allowed to stop davening to keep somebody alive, because that's what happened here. But then the Ran goes further, although it's not a clear raya, And the Ron says, and who hadin, you're allowed to actively be mispalo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take the person out of suffering. Now, some people have claimed that Rabbi Black's position doesn't make logical sense. Because how can you dive into the Eibishter for a result when you're doing everything you can the opposite way? Rabbi Black said, I gotta keep the person alive. I gotta do chest pounding. I gotta do chemotherapy. I gotta put him on a respirator. I have to give him all of the medications. I have to be Mayrech Chaim, and then I pray to the Eibishter, please take him out of his misery. How is it Jitache? Some people taina. And Rav Leich, that your mispalel for a taitza'ah when you're doing kum v'yaseh keneged what it is you're praying for. But Rav Leich said, there's no stira. The Torah is Mechayev me to be Mayrech Chaim. I'm not a balabas to say I don't have a mitzvah of being Mayrech Chaim, but I can ask a Kaddish Baruch Hu to take us out of the Nisayim. So that's exception number one. Now exception number two, and this is very, very nogeya, is a shayla about pain relief. Let me explain what the issue is. There are extreme ways that we could help a person who is suffering great, severe pain, even if we cannot cure the machala. We use things that are actually normally illegal. Narcotics. Morphine is a very good example. Morphine is a controlled substance. Morphine is a prohibited drug, but for extreme pain relief, it can be administered. Sometimes patients have what are called their own morphine pumps. They control the medication. Now, it used to be in the olden days, doctors didn't want to give patients prescriptions for morphine because they were afraid patients would become drug addicts. Now, they only have 2 weeks to live. So what's the big chashash if they become a drug addict? But it was actually discovered that when patients self-medicate and they push their pump only when they have pain, they actually give less to themselves than the doctors do. And they actually do not become addicted. So they, like Chazal say, halev yedeya maras nafshe. The lave of the chayla in pain knows what he needs. And therefore there's a certain concept of trusting them. But here is the problem with morphine, among other things. Morphine slows up the body, and morphine increases the risk of cardiac arrest, heart attack, and it increases the risk of respiratory failure, in which you simply stop breathing, because it slows everything up. So here's the question. If a person is a chayla that is suffering yisurin, and we're supposed to keep that person alive, is he allowed to take a pain medication that increases the risk that he might die earlier? So here, the poskim say that yes, because as long as you're not taking it to commit suicide, so it's only Hashem knows, if you're taking the morphine to kill yourself, then it's suicide. But if you're taking the morphine, and it's not a psychoratia that is going to kill you, it just increases the risk, but the tachlis of the medication is to minimize pain and suffering, this is mutter, because that's nichlau in the Heter Refuah. The Torah says, Nitin Rishus L'Reipe L'Rapus. I mean, think about it this way. Every time you have an operation for tonsils, you're putting yourself in sakana. A person can die, even for a routine operation. But Elamai, if it's being done for a legitimate tachlis, the fact that there's a tzad sakana doesn't answer it. Pain control is 100%. A legitimate, permissible refuah that's nichlal in the heter of reshus l'reipe l'rapos. So even under a vitalist position, if you're taking a dosage that for sure will kill a person, that's going to be usher. But if it just increases the risk for pain management, it's going to be permitted. So that's the second exception, right? We have prayer, tefillah. The second is pain relief. By the way, the Lahavdil, just to familiarize yourself with some of the vocabulary. The Catholic Church, Lahavdil, which also has a very extensive medical ethics law within their religion, has a term for this. It's called the double effect test. Double effect means a medication that relieves pain but can also cause death. That's their sprach. So that's called a double effect. So they consider it to be permitted as long as you're doing it for the pain relief and not for the death effect. And halacha would go along with that same musar. Yeah.
Would there be an argument of quality of life versus quantity of life? So let's say taking certain medication would be of segregation.
Yeah.
So it would definitely kill the person.
Yeah.
Quicker than they would have died. But taking the medication means they can be more active in Avodas Hashem in the shorter time that they'll.
So it definitely will kill them. You're giving me the case. Yeah, yeah.
No more definitely than their existing condition will kill them.
Oh no! So they're
already ill.
No, that would be a chetrin. But if the medication will definitely kill them earlier, then quality of life would not be a chetrin.
So according
to this, I'm going to throw a bluff. I'm going to give you another position. I'll probably have to save it, I guess, for next month. but according to Rabbi, you have to sustain life for that condition.
Okay.
Now, the third exception is if the tipul itself is a risky or an experimental procedure. So, for example, if a person is a chola and he's up for an operation, and if the operation is successful, he might be healed. But there's also a big chashash, it may kill him right away. So he's not mechuyav. His chiyuv to be matzil himself does not require him to be machnis himself in a sakana. Okay. Now, all of this is Rabbi Bleich's position called the vitalist position, meaning you generally have to keep people alive at all costs. But the emphasis is,
what about the other way, the person to take the experimental thing, is that permissible?
It is permissible, but he's not mechuyav, he's allowed to. Yeah. But let me mention the other shita, because the other shita is actually the majority Jew. You wouldn't know, because Rabbi Bleich writes in English, and this is what he writes, so people think this is the shita. But the emphasis is Rav Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rav Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, and even the Stipler in a letter. Stipler didn't write a tshuva. The Stipler in a letter in Karyana de Igrisa said this very much b'kitzer. Has a whole different mahalach on this. And the Stipler even says, the Velt says that when somebody's suffering and sick, you have to do everything you can to keep them alive. The Stipler says, Lo yadati ma hamakor lazeh. The Stipler says, who says you have to keep people alive if they're suffering and in pain? Lav davka. So here are the gedarim that Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe gives you the following.
Did Rav Moshe give all these sources?
Huh? No, the Stipler doesn't give any sources at all. Does Rav Moshe give these sources?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of a footnote. This is the one, my one tie on him, because in the main article, he goes on and on about you have to keep people alive no matter what. In the footnote, he'll say Rav Moshe, they're like side points there.
But he has the sources?
I don't know if he knows, I don't know if he quotes the Stipler. The Stipler I saw myself in Karyana de Igrisa, but in the Karyana de Igrisa, the Stipler does not give any makaris. He just says, but...
How does he accept it if he argues in such
he has other makaris. I mean, he's arguing from the basic concept of Pikuach Nefesh. I mean, listen, he has a strong argument. I mean, Pikuach Nefesh is Daichet. But he has other rayas, and you have to look at all the rayas that he brings. So let me just tell you b'kitzur, because we're running out of time, the basic mahalach of Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, which l'chayra would seem to be halacha l'maisa, I would think. And that is the following. We are mechalek between two types of chaylim. Sometimes you have a chayla that has a potential of getting better. Other times you have a chayla that even with the tipul only has what is called chayei sha'ah. Now chayei sha'ah, I mean temporary life, Rav Meisha proves that that's a duration of less than a year. Meaning to say, no matter what you do, you're not going to cure him. He's going to die b'derech hateva within a year. In fact, my chemotherapy is a very good example. If he doesn't have chemo, he'll die in 3 months. Even with the chemo, you can keep him alive for 9 months. So that's called chayesha, meaning you're not going to cure him. You're just going to be marich chayesha. So the Shlomo Zalman says the following. If you don't have a tipul that will cure him, and the only thing you will do is be marich chayei sha'ah, meaning even with the tipul, he will live for less than a year, and the chayla is suffering, shrek lecha yisurin, and he doesn't have a desire to live, so Rav Shlomo Zalman says, b'chi ha'gavne, you're not mechuyev to give him tipulim that will be marich chaye, every word here is important, that will be marich chaye sha'ah with yisurin. But Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Meisha both say you cannot actively kill him like a suicide or the like, and they have another chiluk as well. And that is, although you can use this cheshbon to be minea chemotherapy and chest pounding and the like, but you cannot be minea food, water, and oxygen, because since those are the things that are needed for everyday life, being minea, the food, the water, and the oxygen, would be called a ritzicha. So it's a complicated hagdara, but based on this, going back to the chemotherapy example, you would not be mechuyev to give the chayla the chemotherapy, but you would be mechuyev to give him even tube feeding. That's called hydration and nutrition and breathing, right? The ability to breathe, etc., because that's called ritzicha. Now I want to point out, in the secular world, they treat hydration and nutrition the same way as chemotherapy. And the patient could sign a living will saying, I want to be taken off feeding. According to Rav Meisha and Shlomo Zalman Orbach, you cannot take a person off feeding. And if you didn't put them on the feeding, you have to put them on the feeding, etc. Because that's not called a tipul refui. That is not called a medical treatment. That is called the general sustaining of life, and not giving the person what he generally needs to live would be a ritzicha. It wouldn't just be a leisamayt al dam reyacha. Now, there's much more to talk about here, but let me just mention.
The getter is that, yeah, it's only going to be marcha chayisha.
That's the getter. So again, if the tipul at best is only marich chayisha, and the patient is suffering tremendous yisurin, you are allowed not to provide it, except in the case of food, water, and oxygen, which you have to provide even for chayei sha'ah. Now, what's interesting is, it may turn out that according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, there may be more of a chiyuv to treat people in comas than people who are not in comas. Because again, the heter of being minea tipul is the suffering of the patient. Now, when a person's in a coma, they're not suffering, they're not aware. Let's imagine you have somebody in a coma, right? You might have to take care of them like forever until they go into cardiac arrest or whatever it is. Because the whole heter to be minea is to spare the person from yisurin. If there are no yisurin, then you have the chiyuv of leisamed al dam reyacha. So they say b'shem Rav Chaim Meisher, and this is also a very, very unfortunate. We don't have it b'chsav, but they meet this mipi Hashmua that Rav Chaim Meisher paskind again, like Rav Shlomo Zalman later paskind, and Rav Chaim Meisher was gadol shebegdalim. Rav Chaim Meisher said that chayi, that it's not just chaye shah with yisurin, but also chaye shah in a comatose position. You know, Rav Chaim Meisher said there is no chiyuv to be marich chaye shah of a patient in a coma. Now again, please be sure you understand what that means. If you could keep the person alive for more than a year, you have to do so. But we're talking about if even with the probable treatment, the life you're extending is less than a year, chaye shah. So in Rav Meisher and Rav Shlomo Zalman's tshuva, it's chaye shah with yisurin. Rav Chaim Meisher was maisef chaye shah with lack of consciousness. Now the truth is that it's not clear to me what the svara of the hetzer would be, but and I also, as I say, people say this b'shem Rav Chaim Meisher, but I don't know where Rav Chaim Meisher says it. It's not in the Achiezer. So I don't even know what the makar is. I just heard it recently at a conference. But be it as it may, this is very different than Rabbi Bleich. Rabbi Bleich is basically saying that you are mechuyev to be marich chayim no matter what, unless the treatment is a risky or dangerous treatment. Right? This is saying for keret. You're not mechuyev to be marich chayesha b'makam yisurin. But let me just point out, and I'll just end here, that this is very, very complicated because Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe and Rav Chaim Meisher and the Stipler are simply saying you're not mechuyev to provide certain tipulim, right? But you're certainly not allowed to kum v'yaseh, cause a person to die early, right? In other words, you can't kill a person or help him commit suicide. In other words, there's vada yechiluk between a shevi al tase in not giving them something and a kum v'yaseh that causes them to die a minute early. Now the problem is that breaks down a lot, meaning the distinction between actively killing somebody and passively withholding a refuah is not an obvious thing. For example, if a person is on a respirator, right? So is shutting off the respirator a maisa? Now it is a maisa, you're shutting off the respirator. Or is it really a mania? You're holding back. You're not putting anything in his body. You're not shooting a bullet in him. You're holding back. You're mania, a breathing apparatus. So it's not so funny. If you're mechalek between kum v'yaseh and shevi al tase, discontinuing treatments. Now again, if you didn't start the treatment yet, that's shevi al tase. But if you start a treatment and discontinue, is that shevi al tase, or is that kum v'yaseh? Medicine. Let's say he's getting chemotherapy. So if I didn't start the chemotherapy yet, shevi al tase. What if I started and now I discontinue? Now you could say, well, I'll wait until the bag empties out, and I won't replace the bag. Right? That's the chayra a shevi. In other words, just because I gave him medicine yesterday doesn't mean if I don't give him medicine, that's called the kum v'yaseh. You see? So this is going to be a very subtle and difficult issue, meaning it is foundational in this psak that there's a chiluk between shevi al tase and kum v'yaseh. Right? That's mukhrich in the yaseh of the psak. But then you have to analyze every tziur. Is it on maneya the tipul, in which case there's a heter for yisurin b'chayeshah? Or is it that I'm doing something to the patient which causes his life to be shorter, in which case that's ritzicha or suicide? Okay, so you have to be very, very careful in analyzing that. So
what did the Poskim say about that question?
Well, the Poskim say that shutting off a respirator is called a kumbiase because it may cause an immediate trauma to the patient, causing him to die. On the other hand, discontinuing chemotherapy, even if you started it, is a shevi al kasa, a new medicine, and the like. But I'll give you an interesting example. They have, you know what a defibrillator is? That's what the heart stops beating. So they have an electric shock. In fact, a lot of shuls, in the States at least, a lot of shuls have defibrillators if somebody gets into a heart attack. So now they have, in a pacemaker, they actually install within the person's body a defibrillator that if the heart stops beating, they'll be right. Now, here is the thing. They have a way of deactivating the defibrillator so it won't operate. Let's say the person had a stroke. The person is very, the person doesn't want to live. The person's suffering a lot. But he happens to have a pacemaker with a defibrillator. Now, right now he's healthy. Right now, I mean, he's not healthy. He has a stroke, but his heart is beating okay. But he wants to have a matzav where in the event he gets a heart attack, he doesn't want the pacemaker to start up because he would rather die. Now, let's consider two tziyurim. Tziyur number one is, the guy doesn't have a pacemaker. He goes into cardiac arrest. Am I mechuyev to defibrillate him? It could be like Rav Maishe. In many cases, I'm not mechuyev because he's suffering yisurin. Let's assume that it's a chayesha. So I'm not mechuyev to be marech his life for chayesha, be yisurin. So you're not mechuyev to chest pounds, which could break ribs. You're not mechuyev to electrically stimulate the heart. Because that's a shevi altasa, right? That's a shevi altasa. I don't have to do this if he doesn't want. So here's the chav. Let's say he already has a pacemaker, meaning to say it's going to start up by itself. He asks me when he's healthy to discontinue the mechanism. Now, is that a kumviase or is that a shevi altasa? You hear? It's a kumviase because you're actively disengaging the electrical pacemaker. But it's essentially a shevi altasa because all that means is when he gets into cardiac arrest, you don't have the mechanism that's going to be piled. So, the argument is, the same svara that says, I don't have to pound on his heart, if it's chayesha yisurin, would say, I could create the mechanism that's not going to turn on and pound on his heart. So that's a machlekes apaiskim, then this is a technology that's quite, it comes up not an insignificant amount of times, in which terminal patients who are suffering pain, who have pacemakers from earlier tekufa, want the pacemaker to be activated. Now, if they're going to die right now, and if they're in the middle of a heart attack, and you deactivate the pacemaker, that's ritzicha, that's not a shaila. Because this is already keeping him alive, as soon as you shut it off he dies, that's ritzicha. That's not the question. The question is, you're deactivating it when his heart is healthy, so it won't work when he gets sick. So some paiskim say that's a shevi altasa, and that would be the same as not pounding on his heart, b'shas maisa. Others say once he has the pacemaker, it's a kumbiase to deactivate it. So all I'm saying is that in Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe's psak, the chiluk between shevi altasa and kumbiase is yesodistic. And yet, in modern medical technology, it's not always going to be pushit to be aimed on that. It's a very dakas. Sometimes these are dakistic chilukim. Now, a very good makar, besides Rabbi Bleich, let me give you another very, very excellent makar. Rav Zilberstein, this is in Lashon HaKadosh, Rav Zilberstein, Rav Yashiv's son-in-law, although this was his first wife, she was Nifteres. So Rav Zilberstein is Rav Chaim Kineski's brother-in-law. He's really an ish poloim. because besides being a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, he has such an imagination because he thinks of all sorts of hypotheticals. You know, they put out safer after safer after safer, and he just comes up with, you know, Heichi Timso, like, gives you some case, and like in every daf of Gemara, he'll give you like 20 interesting cases, and how would you analyze it, and the like. So he has one of his swarm, he writes quite a lot. He has 5 volumes of shiurim that he gave to doctors. They're called shiurim l'reifin. 5 chalakim. And like one volume is on pregnancy problems, including abortion, contraception, you know, all of those issues. Stem cell research and all that's kind of prenatal. Then one volume is on, you know, terminally ill patients at the end of their lives, you know, things like that. Another is on confidentiality in medicine, you know, so he has like volumes on all of these different topics. So he has all of these mahalchim where he essentially follows, again, Rabbi Yashav also followed this mahalach, the notion of chayei shah and the chiluk between shevi al tas and kumbi yaseh, and then he goes into what types of interventions are shevi al tasa, and what types of things are kumbi yaseh. So this is not pashut. This requires a great deal of iyun, and the iyun is both things. You know, the Gra says that a dayan, as true for any paisek, has to know 2 things. The dayan has to know the chachmas ha-taira. You have to know the taira, you have to know the halacha. But the dayan also has to know the metzias. You can know the taira, but if you don't know the metzias, you're not going to be able to apply the taira to the matzav because you don't understand what the situation is. This is like they say, garbage in, garbage out. If the information you get is not accurate information, then the psak is not going to be good. That's how they learn that kol dayan shedan din emes liamitei. What is emes liamitei? That emes is the emes of taira, and the amitei is the emes of metzias. So befrat in this inyan, you need to know exactly what the procedures are, and what is shevi al tase, what is kumbi yaseh. And then even after you know, you then may have to talk to a paisek to see the gedarim of it. That's why all of the great gedolei paiskim, particularly in medical issues, but really in all issues, they had scientists and doctors, right? Rav Shlomo Zalman, in fact, the doctors that he was closest to are still around. You have Dr. Steinberg, Dr. Avram, Dr. Abraham, and what's the other guy? There are 3. And Halpern, Mordechai Halpern, right? There are the 3... They're all musmachim, all talmidei chachamim, all people who are themselves baki b'shas. It's very amazing. You know, we've created a situation where you can't go to medical school and be a baki b'shas. Well, I don't know. I mean, apparently some people did. You know,
cousin who had a husband used to treat Shlomo Zalman.
So the Gedolei HaPaiskim always had scientists, engineers, people that would tell them that they could trust, that would tell them the metzias on which they would dance. So it's very, very important. Sometimes a less experienced person might just paskin a shaila without even knowing the metzias, and that's a chisorin by definition. Okay. Anyway, so I'm sorry I had to be makatsir, but I guess this is it for till after this month. I think this is the end of this year. Actually, I think that next month we have another subject to be announced. But maybe Maral, I don't know, maybe different, Rabbi Jacobs wants to do a Hashkafa topic combining first year and second year. But be it as it may, Ait Chazayin L'mayit.